I've got relationships where, you know, it's really a matter of we get the asset, we're doing our diligence. I'm not really going to anybody to raise the capital until it passes the diligence, because it'd be premature otherwise. What if there's the tax are too high and sours the deal? What if there's a title issue or the valuations aren't what they think they are? Why would I hit you up for money if I'm not going to go forward with closing on the deal?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jay Tenenbaum has acquired over 450 distressed mortgage notes and real property in more than 30 states. He attributes his success and expertise to his ability to effectively integrate 20 years of experience as a former debt collection professional. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm excited to jump in today. 20 years of experience as a former debt collection professional, if I could get the words out of my mouth in one whole sentence there. Tell us quickly, there's three questions I ask every guest who comes to the show. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Very good questions. So how did I get my start? So I grew up in Colorado. My father owned restaurants. My mom owned a catering service. Thought that's what I was going to do in life. You know, just follow their stuff. I was a, you know, busboy, waiter, bartender, you know, that kind of style, that kind of life. One night, my father and I are having dinner by ourselves, which was a very rare occurrence anyway, like a pink unicorn. And he says, get out of this business, go get a profession. So medicine did not interest me, but law did. So I hightailed it off to law school in California and stayed. Ended up marrying my wife, and we had a debt collection law practice for 20 years in California, and got out of that business in 2008, 2009, 2012. As I was mentioning, we were investing in buying in judgment liens in California and not hitting banks or garnishing wages anymore, just executing on real property. And then in 2013, got an opportunity. Guy sent me an email, a friend of mine sent me an email that this guy was having this note buying for Dummies workshop in San Diego. And so for 4 days, you know, looked at it and, you know, went down there and I'm like, gee, I could do this. I mean, you know, I've been in debt all my life. It's just not ever personally. And really the key to how I got started in investing in distressed mortgages was, you know, as I wanted to be a real estate investor, like everybody else, you know, post-crash, et cetera, was, you know, you go to the hotel ballrooms, all that kind of stuff. But come Monday morning, my challenge was always, where am I going to find a deal? And in this workshop, he introduced us as part of the workshop, two different hedge fund sources. So I had sourcing right away. And I just built those relationships over the course of time because, you know, and essentially I'm lazy. I don't like to hunt. So I get deals brought to me on spreadsheets on a regular basis. That's what's enabled me to do over 450 deals since 2013.
Wow, that's a lot of fun. And it's rare, I mean, that you go to a 4-day seminar or something like that. And I hate to say it because there's a lot of, you know, gurus out there teaching nonsense, you know, but you got to go to a seminar and there was actually actionable information. And hey, here's some real people you can plug in with.
Right. I mean, it was, you know, the 4 days was a great opportunity, you know, great opportunity, just like anything else. But again, as he mixed in relationships building as well, I did, you know, sign up for his mastermind and mentoring program, which was fantastic. He's still a good friend to this day. He's my mentor. But yeah, I mean, the information was good. But, you know, 4 days of doing this, you know, this business, I've done it for, you know, for quite a while now. And certainly I've, you know, stub my toe along the way and rip the bandaid off. So just to set the landscape, you couldn't jump out. Even with my experience, I wasn't capable to, after 4 days, go, okay, I can do this, right? The mentoring and the mastermind really, really did help, you know, help as well. It helped me in a lot of different areas. What was interesting was not only did I have relationships that the people that I met while I was there, but he was part of the package was this Rolodex of other banks and hedge fund contacts, which, by the way, I've never used. You know, I just never, I started cultivating my own relationships, but what I did take away in the mastermind, in the mentoring side of it, was 8 weeks of mentoring, you know, weekly calls, was putting together your prospectuses, your business plans, things like that to help you raise capital. Because that was in the note side, there's no bank you go to and get your 90% leverage. So raising capital has been integral. And that's really what enabled me to be as successful as I have.
That's interesting. Tell me about the things you like about your business right now. What about it appeals to you and why does it make sense?
Interesting question. Depends what day it is. Some days I'm in the outhouse, some days I'm in the penthouse and back again. I like first of all, when I cut my teeth on buying, you know, the true low value assets, houses that were worth, you know, the Midwest, the South, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 houses, right? And you're buying them back then, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. So it was real easy, to get a borrower to keep them in their home, do a loan mod, and, you know, work something out, and your rate of returns when you're buying that low value stuff, you know, the rate of returns phenomenal. So the satisfaction of keeping a borrower in their home, generating cash flow and wealth legacy to our investors was really the initial why. We've scaled from there. And we're buying, you know, higher value assets, and just really as an acquisition, opportunistic acquisition source. We're doing a lot. We're getting paid off a lot of auction this year. With the stuff we take back, we're flipping because now the price points aren't really conducive to even, we do some rentals out of it, but mostly when you're buying an asset for $350,000, you know, the house is worth $600,000 to $700,000. It doesn't make sense to do as a rental or keep the guy in there as a loan mod. It just doesn't.
Right. That's really intriguing. I mean, is there still opportunity in that space, in the distressed mortgage space right now? Or I would imagine, you know, the prices even on distressed notes have gotten, you know, bid up to where you're paying quite a bit more even maybe than what you were just a couple of years ago.
While we're paying more, the houses are appreciating more. When I started in 2013, you know, everything was pretty much underwater, which is fine. You still, because you it was monopoly money. If I'm buying a loan that's got a, you know, that's, you got borrowers $80,000 and the house is worth 50 and I'm buying it for 10, you know, there's monopoly money in there, right? The rearage is monopoly money. So there's a lot of things, a lot of opportunity there. Now, everything we're buying pretty much is equity. So like I said, we either get paid off at auction. So it really matters of what am I paying for it, but what's my opportunity? And, you know, we run our models through all the various core exit strategies. And, you know, again, we still see the profitability in this stuff. Now, I will say that in the past, I could look at 50 assets and 50 assets were something that was viable to buy. Now that 50 assets, I'm probably able to buy six. Not that I can't buy, have the capital, the other 40, 44 just don't make sense to buy.
Right, right. That's interesting. That's very, very interesting. Talk to us, like, how many of these notes does it take to actually create a viable business that, you know, can continue to sustain itself? Is it, I mean, what's that number when you started out? What did that number look like to where you said, hey, I'm not just buying, you know, a few income streams. I've actually got something going on here.
Again, it really depends on your investor ID, what kind of monthly, you know, you kind of work, reverse engineer it. What is your, you know, monthly income desire? And if you're generating, let's say, you know, 20, 30% return on your money, how do you get to that, you know, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, you know, monthly income kind of deal? But really, if you're building it as cash flow, you want to build it as, you know, I'm going to continue to aggressively buy. Like 1 year in 2015, we bought 100 notes. I bought 77 in 2015. I probably bought 60 this year, but there were 60 of different quality than the stuff before. Because I probably spent probably the same amount I spent on in 2015, I probably spent on two notes in this year, right? It's higher value stuff. But, you know, if you're building a small value pool, you want to be cognizant of, it's kind of like rentals and multifamily. If you're in a D neighborhood, you're going to get the asset cheaper, but your tenants are not going to stay. You'll be in a B minus C plus neighborhood. You're going to pay a little more. Your tenants are more sustainable. Obviously, when I'm buying low value assets, you know, the price points, the valuations that I mentioned before, you want to stick and move. I have plenty of borrowers that still paid me for 5+ years. No problem. But I also have borrowers that paid once or twice and I had to get rid of them. Or, you know, you kind of like not really buy low and sell high, but you kind of want to keep your portfolio mixed to where if it's performing, nothing's inevitable, right? So sometimes you want to, you know, sell when you have the opportunity to sell off your performing loan. Remember, you're buying a non-performing loan, you're getting it, you're doing a loan mod with the borrower, you're getting it to reperform. Now it's value add. Now it has a different, now you can resell that note if you choose and do it. So you're kind of returning your money, right? So you're buying it, you're keeping some of it for cash flow, you're selling off a portion over, you know, in certain time periods, and you're, you know, generating income there. So your annual income is kind of should be a mix. Shouldn't always be just what you're generating off cash flow. But yeah, I can certainly see where you just keep buy, you keep getting more loan mods in your portfolio, just like, you know, rental portfolio or multifamily, you're having the cash flow generated. And that's what my why was when I initially started this business.
What vehicle do you use to keep, because you guys have to raise money from investors in order to do this. As you said, there's no bank. There's no bank that's loaning you money to go out and buy mortgage notes. It is, you have to have the capital in hand. So are you guys using a fund? Or do you guys have single asset, you know, that investors are investing in? What's that look like? Because I would imagine that money is constantly cycling in and out. So how do you handle that?
True. So it's been an evolving process. 22, we will probably set up our fund. The fund has been in the oven for quite a while. And every time we keep going towards it, we have an opportunity where somebody says, you know what, I've got a, you know, Wells Fargo truck for some money, I'll just give it to you. I'm kidding. But where the capital raise flow was there. So we've evolved from single asset or pools of asset, from JVs where I'm investing in identifiable assets with only one investor, maybe a pool, to we're doing this now that we're in the higher value space, we're doing syndications.
Okay.
So we're syndicating one-off assets. So yeah, member managed LLCs.
Interesting. Now, that to me is not the answer I would have expected, just because I don't know. And again, I'm not sure what that syndication looks like. Is that syndication $5 million? Is it $1 million? I mean, what's the dollar figure where you look at that and say, hey, this makes sense to do a syndication?
Really, it's kind of the reverse. Like, what am I buying? In October, we bought a note that cost us $1 million. Now, granted, I actually had a seller relationship where 70% of that was financed. But the other 30% I raised privately. So I think the raise was like $400,000.
Right.
I'm not expecting one investor to write me a $400,000 check. So obviously that's something that would be syndicated. But even if I'm spending, you know, $100,000, $200,000 on a loan, it's really a matter of we put it out to our investor base. If somebody wants to come in and say, I want the whole thing, then it's a JV. Right. But if, you know, more than one investor says, I'm interested in this deal, we'll syndicate it.
Gotcha.
Because that's how you have to do it. You're not pooling monies. Right. So one investor gets, you know, what's the whole thing? It's just one investor. But if multiple investors want in, then we syndicate it through setting up the Series LLC for that specific asset purchase.
Gotcha. Interesting. What's the timeline from when you get a first look at the assets and then it's to close? I would imagine it's pretty speedy, isn't it?
About 30 days, plus or minus, typically.
That's longer than I would have thought.
Well, I mean, we've got relationships where, you know, it's really a matter of we get the asset, we're doing our diligence. I'm not really going to anybody to raise the capital until it passes the diligence, because it'd be premature otherwise. What if there's the tax are too high and sours the deal? What if there's a title issue or the valuations aren't what they think they are? Why would I hit you up for money if I'm not going to go forward with closing on the deal? So that time period to do our diligence, you know, takes a week or so, give or take. And then, you know, we set up the prospectus, right? It's all about, you know, my capital raising style is really the less I speak, the better off I am. So our prospectus are built very nicely, have, you know, the relevant information in there. And basically I'm just sending it to you. You're taking a look at it and you're saying, I'm interested or not. It's really that simple. So I really try to, you know, with the relationship I have with my selling relationships, it's really not a matter of I want to go to you and go, hey, I've got something you might be interested in investing in. I need a decision yesterday, right? So you kind of have to build that leeway.
Gotcha. That's very interesting. Two, I want to come back to the due diligence segment of this show, because that is something I want to touch on, is what you get to due diligence. Before we do that, you know, while we're talking on money and returns on investment, how do you guys calculate? You know, let's say you find a note you like, how do you calculate ROI on that as you send it out to your investors as a potential syndication? What's that look like?
So you're talking to the wrong person for that. My business partner is the analytical guy. I can't sit in front of a computer to analyze deals for more than 5 minutes. You know, instead, I'm not wired for that. I'm the deal guy. You ask me what excites me. I'm the deal guy. Doing loan mods, talking to my attorneys, working stuff out, you know, just being on the phone all day. That's me. But no, we, in our prospectus, not only do we calculate the ROI, the annualized return on investment, but the XIRR too as well. What the XIRR is calculating your capital for the specific time periods that it's out. Because our model is really somewhat unique. And what that is you're raising capital to buy the note. Your capital investment, your investors have got their capital outstanding until such time as either we get paid off at auction or we take the property back. Now that's, on average this year, we've seen about 6 months, but there's several assets that have gone longer, some assets that have gone shorter. Average 6 months. Let's say 6-9 months is probably really more realistic time frame. At which point, if we take it back, we then go out. Now that we own the property, went from a note to actually we own the property now. Now we go back with our credit, you know, our lending facilities, non-QM lending facilities, and we have credit, you know, pre-approved relationships with. And then we go in and do what we call a delayed purchase. So we're not, now that we own it, we're not refinancing it, because we only get 80% of the purchase price. We're doing a delayed purchase where they're giving us 90% of the purchase price back plus 100% of our rehab cost. So we're returning that 70% of the delayed purchase back to the investor. So the XIRR is, I spent $100,000 to acquire it on January 1st. April 1st, we did the delayed purchase. You know, in July, whatever, we did the delayed purchase and I got, you know, $70,000 back. So now I got $30,000 in the deal still to its fruition. And the XIRR is calculated in that respect.
Gotcha. That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, that you could get investor capital back that quickly is kind of crazy.
Well, I mean, let's set the expectations. Our investors want it back quicker than, but you know, every deal is on its own and you can't control the court system. You can't control the borrower going to BK the day before the sale. I mean, but here's the one thing though, that I want to make very, very clear to your listeners. You can't control time, but time is not a preclusionary barrier. It's just time. It's not like guy files bankruptcy on you the day before the sale, your investment's wiped out. You just have to take the time to get him out of bankruptcy and move forward.
Right.
And while the moratoriums are in place and Chicago is notorious for delays, you know, continuing hearings, whatever, I can't control the court system. But I know inevitably my investment is safe and risk averse because I will prevail at some point of time.
Just takes time. Yeah. I like that perspective. It keeps you from getting wound up, I bet, you know, about stuff you just can't control. Talk to us on the due diligence side. We're running short on time. Speaking of time here, what is your due diligence process? Can you break that down maybe into five or six things that you guys, you know, quickly, you know, look for in a deal that says, hey, these are hallmarks of a good or bad deal?
There's actually only four. You're reviewing the title. Make sure that, okay, remember, you're buying a note. So really, when we're examining title, we want to still make sure that we're still buying a first position loan. We're looking at, you know, the assignment trail, because the chain of ownership from the originating bank down to us is through the various assignments of the mortgage. You want to make sure that those are still intact, that there's nothing. I mean, even if there is, if it's not intact, it's easily fixable. We want to make sure that we're buying a first position mortgage. We want to make sure that the tax, delinquent tax, remember, the borrower's not paying their mortgage, they're not paying their taxes typically either. We want to make sure the taxes, the delinquent taxes, because we're buying this stuff technically as is. So the seller is selling us subject to the delinquent taxes. So if the taxes are too high, that makes the investment, you know, less attractive. That's a problem. Right. However, what we typically do is go back to the seller and say, look, if the tax are 10 grand, we just reduce the purchase price by 10 grand. We'll pay the tax ultimately, but we're reducing the purchase price. Valuation, that's key, right? So you can do your desktop evaluations and all your comps and everything else with all internet tools that are out there. But we also build teams in our respective markets and have our realtors go out and look at the properties, not necessarily engage the borrower, can't engage the borrowers, but look at the properties and run their valuations. You know, basically, while I could do a valuation from Arizona, my realtor is going to tell me, yeah, but it's that side of the street versus this side of the street.
Right.
You change your valuations all along. And you got to know that stuff, right? And the fourth thing, like I said, back in the day when I was doing loan mods, it's really a matter of, you know, I was only wanting to buy occupied properties. Those are the four major things. Now, obviously, if something comes up in those buckets, you'll drill down a little further.
Got it. Man, that's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Jay, thanks for breaking down your business, what you guys do, how you buy, what you look at, the things to look out for. This has certainly been insightful. I've enjoyed chatting, especially learning about how you raise capital and, you know, deploy it. That certainly is intriguing. Do appreciate it. Let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this: what is one tool or resource that you find you can't live without?
Right now, it's actually our proprietary software that we developed for ourselves. Well, it's on the market. We have our software that's available for users, but there's nothing like it in this industry. You know, when your portfolio is, you know, several hundred assets, you know, we weren't the size of the big boys who have their own proprietary software. So how to stay organized? I mean, Google Sheets and Dropbox and spreadsheets just don't cut it. And there was no really asset management, task management component to this business. I asked in my debt collection practice, I had a software that did all that. I asked, that was the first question I asked when I got in this space. And they're like, there isn't anything. So it's either too costly or too cost prohibitive, right? You know, AppFolio, things like that. We would only use about 10% of it, and it's too cost prohibitive. So that, you know, had the major hedge funds use their own stuff. So we developed our own. We're our first client, and it is on the market. REI Blade. Go to www.reiblade.com. It's the one thing I can't live without now.
That's fantastic. Good for you. That, you know, there's a hole in the market. You have an opportunity to fill it. REIblade.com. We'll make sure we put a note or a link to that in the show notes. Second question for you. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it? Or even one mistake, you know, when looking at notes.
Yeah. Two things. Don't fall in love with your deal, for starters. And the other thing would be, I mean, don't fall in love with the deal, because then you're just going to get too short-sighted. Don't try to make a deal work. While, yeah, if you're out there door knocking, whatever, you like, you want to make this deal work, you want to do a deal, be patient. Because, you know, you rather, you know, the old adage, the best trades that were made were ones that were never made. So, you know, if you're making a bad deal, it doesn't get any better over time. And the other piece of advice would be, you know, if you're brand new to a certain thing, whether it's notes or whatever type of real estate you want to get involved in, you know, partner up with somebody who's already done it for you. Let them lead you on your path.
Right. That's fabulous. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Back in the day, it was keeping borrowers in their homes. I mean, now it's, I guess, regenerifying neighborhoods and just, you know, giving the opportunity to our investors to, you know, do better than their, you know, certificate of disappointment.
I love that. I love that. That's fantastic. Jay, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Several ways. Yes, I will answer my cell phone, 714-458-6317. My email is jay@scottsdalerei.com. REI is for real estate investments, not the camping store. And our website, www.scottsdalereI.com.
Jay, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it. This was great.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.